Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us today. I'm just going to give it another minute or so just in case we have a few stragglers, and then we will go ahead and get started. All right, good morning. My name is Gina Page. I'm DCF's Communications Director. I've obviously emailed with all of you over the last 48 hours or so. We really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today. We're going to have two presenters. This presentation is not going to be recorded, but we will be providing you with the slides afterwards. I do want to just talk a little bit about attribution. So the presentation portion, which is going to be about the first 20-ish minutes or so, is on background. So please no direct quotes. There will be an availability at the end where we will have an opportunity for folks to ask questions. Those can be direct quotes. And we'll kind of once we switch that availability, I'll talk a little bit about how we're going to do that in this virtual environment. But I'm going to give me 1 second. I'm going to go back because I'm just admitting one more individual into the room and just want to make sure that they are able to see the attribution information. We have two wonderful speakers here today. The first is our secretary, DCF Secretary Jeff Pirtle, and then Priya Bhatia, who is our administrator for the Division of Early Care and Education. And I'm going to kick it over to them to begin today's press briefing.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us and being with us here this morning. Apologize for not being available yesterday, as many families are navigating all the various illnesses going around. Perfect time to be talking about families in childcare. Wanted to share some of this information with folks. We're going to be doing this also with the legislature tomorrow. As we've gotten a lot of questions, both from folks in the media, but policymakers and the public, in light of some of the issues that are going on in Minnesota, particularly around accusations of fraud in childcare, people want to know, how does Wisconsin's system work? What have we done to tackle some of these issues? Some folks have been around long enough that they'll remember the issues and sort of scandals back in 2009 around fraud in childcare in Wisconsin and some of the reforms that were made that frankly led to a stronger, more resilient system that we have today that I think you're going to hear a little bit about today. I'm going to talk about the system overview and a little bit of what the landscape looks like for childcare. Priya will share a little bit about how the Wisconsin Shares Program operates, and then I'll talk a little bit about program integrity, and she'll close us out with sort of the accountability part, the federal and state monitoring, how does all this work, and then we can do everybody's questions. Okay, so an overview of the Wisconsin child care system. I think the first thing to sort of ground us in as we look at how does this work is just a reminder that right now we're talking about regulated childcare. And that means that we're talking generally about providers that are serving four or more unrelated kids who are under the age of seven outside the home for compensation. That is what sort of triggers the requirement around regulated childcare. So there are unregulated kinds of care. You can have babysitting, you can do friend, family, and neighbor care. The neighbor can take care of one kid, that's allowed. That is not illegal, it is unregulated. These types in front of you are the regulated part of the system. There's about 4,800 folks providers in the state of Wisconsin providing care for kids, about 180,000 kids, give or take, in that system. And then there are different types, certified, generally serving smaller families. That's where you can serve under four kids and still get access to shares and some of the programs. It's a family-based setting. Summer camps and after school, licensed family and group, that is typically what we're talking about when we talk about childcare. And then schools also have the ability to run childcare as well under their own set of rules. But what I want to break down when we look at this next slide is sort of a sense of how does that universe look. And about 47% of all providers are going to be group centers. About 47% are going to be family providers, either those licensed family or certified providers. And then everybody else is either in that camp, after school, public school lane. Okay, so it's about 50-50 between group and family. But when we look at kids, 82% of the kids are in group centers. Only 9% are in a family care setting. And that's just economies of scale. So centers can be big. There's, you know, ratios. You have to have a certain amount of staffing. But a center can be as big as you can manage as long as you have the appropriate staffing for it. A family provider is historically capped at 8 kids at most. Most are serving less than that. The last budget did change that they'll be able to go up to 12 with a second adult, but these are implicitly smaller providers. So there's a lot of them serving a small number of kids in each provider, and then the centers are operating at scale at a much larger capacity. So when we sort of think about the universe, that's the texture and landscape for what the breakdown looks like. Okay, so when we think about how the system works, there's a couple of different things when we think about, you know, integrity in the system. There's the front end. What are the regulations that are required and initial licensure requirements for a provider to get into being able to provide care? What is the ongoing monitoring and licensing that happens to ensure that kids are safe? And then what are the progressive enforcement pieces that happen either due to health and safety or financially if a provider is not doing something correct? And what are the recovery pieces and terminations and sort of final actions that can happen if there is, in fact, something financial or health and safety that isn't appropriate? So there's sort of a spectrum of things. So the key pieces on regulation here, age and background. There is a set of background checks and minimum ages folks have to meet. There's training requirements, both for staff and providers on range of both sort of developmental topics, everything from shaking baby to sort of curriculum and instruction pieces, how do you help coach kids and move them through the system, all the way through to the sort of financial monitoring and program integrity pieces that we do. And some of that will depend on the staff person's role. Are they the provider who's responsible for the financial well-being of the center, or are they frontline staff? And those requirements will vary, and training will vary depending on that. A provider has to submit an application. There's a set of policies that they have to have, building plans, insurance, and fees. Folks have questions about that. Most of it's in the regs, and we can help you find kind of how that works. There are inspections. So there are different components to this. It's got to pass building code and health and safety. So some of those are DCF, so health and safety requirements for childcare. There's also building code run by county and overseen by DSPIS, the Department of Safety and Professional Services, regulations around physical safety and what is required at a building. So you've got different components overlaying there. And then health requirements, proof of vaccinations, particularly for animals if they're going to be in the home while childcare is being provided. So there's a set of different things that you got to go through, and some of it will vary between a home setting and a center-based setting. So once you go through that initial process, there's a pre-licensing piece that you go through. There's technical assistance that's available for folks. They'll submit that final application and they're approved. They can open, provide care for kids, and enroll them. And then there's ongoing licensing pieces. So we perform unannounced visits at least annually, sometimes multiple times a year, where we can review documentation and determine compliance. So we're looking at things like staffing levels. Are the files, qualifications, background checks, are the trainings done? Are the people who there say that they're there, and is that correct? Are the program activities happening? So supervision ratios, emergency plans, curriculum and instruction that's happening, health and safety, so that's everything from immunizations to sanitation, medication distribution, and administration, all those pieces, building code checks, fire safety equipment, all the physical environment pieces, as well as the operational stuff. So, you know, checking to see that the policies are there, are the appropriate things posted, parents aware of the appropriate things, enrollment and attendance, transportation, all these pieces are going to get checked when there's a, when they go through a licensing visit. There's a sort of a checklist that the licensor has to go through and determine whether they're in compliance, meeting or not meeting, or whether it doesn't apply each of the elements according to the rules and regulations. So when something isn't correct, and again, that can be a health and safety piece, it can be a piece on program, it could be a financial piece that might get referred to the program integrity side, but there's an initial violation that the licensing specialist can issue. It's like a non-compliance statement. Violations are common. Not every violation is a serious one. There are sometimes things that we're providing technical assistance about or notification that they got to get into compliance with something. A corrective action plan the provider would submit and that might be monitored. So they're saying, oh, there wasn't a cap on the all of the electrical outlets because one of the kids removed them. We didn't check that. So here's our plan for making sure that next time you come by, that that's all going to be squared away. On more serious issues, things will begin to escalate. So we can issue orders and corrections for fines if there's some sort of major violation. We can withhold subsidy and payments to ensure that either we are recouping money that was paid that shouldn't have been paid. So they were claiming a kid that wasn't there. Sometimes that's administrative error. That doesn't necessarily mean it's fraud. Sometimes there's just paperwork that isn't right. But you know, we can do those financial corrections. We can take licensing actions. So we can deny a new provider. We can suspend folks. We can revoke their license and go through that process. And there are times where we issue an immediate closure if there's an imminent threat to health and safety. And that's usually a pretty significant item. So, you know, and it says a little bit there, no heat, ongoing abuse, something specific that's going to lead to that kind of an action. Generally, the seriousness, the extent, the prior history, cooperation is a big factor. A lot of these things come to us because providers will notify us that there's a problem, a staff member did something wrong, that they discovered something, and they will report that to us. And so there is a cooperative relationship here that happens where providers are sharing information with us. It may result in a violation. It may result in a non-compliance and a corrective action plan. But you know, there's going to be a lot of small things going on, and then there's going to be a handful of really big and significant issues that are going to sort of move up and be triaged into the high-risk category. Okay, so Priya is going to talk a little bit about the actual SHARES program. So just as a precursor to this, and she'll talk a little bit about this, but not everyone is in SHARES. So there's regulation for all regulated childcare. SHARES is a funding program for some of the kids who are eligible within the childcare universe. And that's really been the focus of the stuff that's going on. And I think what Priya is going to talk about now. Priya?
Thanks, Jeff. So Wisconsin SHARES is our child care subsidy program. It is designed to assist low-income families with the cost of child care, and it is federally funded. It is funded primarily by the TANF block grant, so temporary assistance for needy families, and by CCDF, which is the Child Care Development Fund. So these are block grants that the federal government gives to states to run child care subsidy programs. In Wisconsin, parents must be participating in an approved activity in order to receive Wisconsin SHARES. That's most typically employment. And you can see here, it can also be participation in W-2 or FSET program. Those are job training programs, the Food Share Employment and Training Program. Parents can also be engaged in education. There is an allowance for activity breaks. So for example, if a parent loses their job, their Wisconsin SHARES subsidy is not automatically terminated, but instead they have a set amount of time to find new employment, and they can continue Wisconsin SHARES during that activity break period. If it's a two-parent household, both parents have to be engaged in approved activities. So going back to the last slide, in addition to an approved activity, there are financial requirements. Specifically, there's an eligibility threshold. In order to enter the program, the family must be at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. So for a family of three, for example, that's about $53,000. Family of four, about $64,300. Just a note, when we say parent, that is inclusive of foster parents, kinship parents, and other situations where another individual besides the biological parent is acting to care for the child. So that's just a brief overview of the Wisconsin SHARES program, and I'm going to turn it back to Jeff.
Okay, on program integrity, and in particular, sort of how did we get to where we are? I talked a little bit about the different phases of the system. I would say in 2009, there's a significant change that's going to happen in the system. Raquel Rutledge's pieces on cashing in on kids will win the Pulitzer Prize and really triggers a nationwide conversation about childcare and program integrity. You see links here to all the different pieces that are there. And there's some highlights where they talk about some of the kinds of things that folks discovered were going on in the system, bogus jobs, sort of ridiculous approvals for job and work activities, agents being slow to act and regulators not revoking licenses, a lot of flexibility or too much flexibility and kind of fraudulent businesses, I would say. Swapping kids back and forth between family providers and a bunch of different things. And this really triggers a whole set of reforms and responses about how Wisconsin's system works. And there's a couple areas we really focus in on: billing for unprovided care, so fraudulent billing, falsification of records, cash checking operations was a big thing that was going on at the time. We don't really see that anymore. The recruiting of fake employees, and so making sure the sort of integrity of staffing is there. There was a 2009 sort of special review that the Legislative Audit Bureau did at the time, and they estimated somewhere between, I would say, I mean, you can see it there, but 17 to 22, 24 million based on a difference between improper subsidy payments and fraudulent reporting on kid enrollment. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how the audits work now, both federally and state, that sort of navigate through these pieces. But what we saw in Wisconsin, and I think you'll see similar things start to happen in some of these other states. And so we are a little bit of an outlier. Some of these things have also become reflected in subsequent federal and state laws in other places. But whistleblower protections for government employees was added. Program integrity staff was bolstered and a whole unit was created to ensure that there is sort of review, particularly at the financial aspects of childcare in Wisconsin. Attendance tracking was enhanced and added so our licensors can look at and our program integrity people can review actual attendance records and not just enrollment. We look at both pieces at different points in time. Fingerprinted background checks was a thing we started before it became a national requirement. They expanded the barred crimes list, so they added a lot of financial crimes to this requirement that would prohibit you from being able to run a child care center or open an in-home family care center. KidStat, sort of based on the stat pieces of the time, was a piece that was created and we still continue to use today, actually in all our human services programs, to review different data metrics and program integrity to really look at how our different programs run and ensure that they are sort of meeting needs, that they have high program integrity, and that they're effective. YoungStar was born out of this conversation. It is the state's quality rating information system. That is a national thing. There are lots of other states that do that. YoungStar in particular was designed in response to some of the things that folks saw happening during that 2009 in the wake of the 2009 scandal. And then we will be one of the states that moves over into an EBT card for childcare payments. This is common in SNAP and other programs. It's required in certain other federal programs now. It is optional in certain other benefit programs, and we are one of the states that do that. One of the arguments in favor of the EBT card is that it sort of bifurcates the relationship between the provider payments and the parent payments and adds a layer of protection from the ability to sort of do fraudulent or collusive activities. It creates a separate monitoring structure and a separate financial structure there. Those things are helpful, and I significantly reduce some of the program integrity issues that folks see going on in other places and certainly that were going on at the time. The state also passed a number of laws that made providers more personally liable so that they couldn't just close their in-home business and be done with it if they had outstanding debts or liabilities. And they also, again, looked at and expanded some of the statutory pieces around crimes caring for children, allowing us to suspend and revoke licenses, to limit subsidy payments for a wider array of things. So a whole bunch of things happened. Some of it's administrative, some of it's statutory, some of it's operationally and programmatic in terms of its different components. But we run a pretty different operationally different system today than we did in 2009. And again, I think those are differences you see between what's happening in Minnesota and how things work in Wisconsin. So one of the questions we get is, okay, so when something happens, when someone refers a complaint, how does this work? So there's a couple of different ways a complaint is gonna come in and trigger an investigation. A licensor is gonna find something when they're doing their unannounced visit. There is a hotline, there is a phone number, there's a website, there's an email box that DCF operates. DHS also operates their own. And if someone refers sort of cross-programmatically, we refer then to the other agency. If a concern comes in about fraud, or there can be things, what we call red flags in the system. So there are data parameters within our payments and enrollment systems that look at wild in swings in payments, changes in enrollment, when people are claiming dollars that exceed the number of kids that they have enrolled, where the system itself can generate a flag. It says, this doesn't look right. It needs to go for a review. And when all of those pieces come in, they show up with our staff and they go through a desk review. And anything that from a red flag review, anything that's a serious concern for health and safety, anything that looks like fraud or collusion, those things immediately go into our high risk category and get prioritized for review. So a referral gets created, case gets assigned, they go through and determine sort of which we have a high, medium, and low risk category. And then we manage every month sort of how many cases are coming in, how many have we closed, and where are we at in progressing those investigations. We have a team of auditors and investigators who will then go in and do a review of the provider history, the shares information, whatever the universe is, the enrollment records and those pieces. They'll generate a communication that ultimately determines all their findings, meet with the provider, and then close the case. And then there might be a series of outcomes from that. There might be a payment discrepancy that gets resolved. It might be an accounting error and there is a payment owed back to us. That is not necessarily fraud, but it is an overpayment. It needs to be collected and corrected, and it can either pay us back or we can take that out of subsequent future payments to make that whole. If they are unwilling to pay or we have to take a serious action, you know, we can take them to court, we can put them in collections, and ultimately taxes and intercepts can be issued to collect future money that's owed to the state if necessary. And if there is financial issues become significant enough, it can impact the eligibility for shares, they could be removed from the shares program or ultimately closed. So there's a whole sort of range of activities that can happen there. And I'm going to pass it back to Priya to talk a little bit about that's like at the provider level, and then the feds in the state sort of do monitoring of how the whole system works, and Priya's going to talk about that.
So as Jeff said, there is federal and state monitoring of how we run the child care subsidy system and our health and safety monitoring here at the state. So the state performs multiple assessments. The big one is the Legislative Audit Bureau performs regular financial audits every 3 years, including of the Wisconsin Shares program, but of CCDF. And then, as we just talked about, at the individual level, state licensor goes out and performs at least one unannounced visit every year. It is not unusual for there to be more than one, depending on the program's history. And then federal requirements, the federal government performs triennial monitoring visits. So on different cycles, they have first a CCDF monitoring visit where they review all the federal CCDF requirements, including health and safety and program integrity, and do a visit and monitor how we are implementing the rules. And then every 3 years on a different cycle than the overall CCDF monitoring, there is a federal improper payment report. So the last time we had that was in 2023, and it will happen again later this year is our expectation. It is every 3 years. You can see here the history that we've had with federal improper payments. We have made great strides since the days that Secretary Pirtle was talking about earlier in the wake of the fraud stories. And the federal government requires that our error rate be below 10%. We take pride in the fact that we are well below that at 2.9% the last time we had a federal improper payment monitoring. In fact, I would say that the Office of Child Care, the Federal Office of Child Care, often asks us to meet with other states to provide some peer-to-peer support for other states that are dealing with challenges or questions around program integrity. So that's just a quick summary of the state audits and federal monitoring that Wisconsin is subject to in the childcare space.
There are a range of resources in the back on Wisconsin Shares, Program Integrity. There's a third one, when we send, regulation, when we send out the slides that folks have access to. Gina, how do you
want to do
questions?
Yeah, so for those who, I know we had a couple folks join a little late, just a friendly reminder that the presentation was on background only, so no direct quotes. We are now transitioning into the availability portion, so these are direct quotes. Given we have a number of folks on here, what we're going to do is if you can type your questions into the chat, they will come to the host and co-host, and we will take them as they come in. We have a couple minutes, about five-ish or so. So feel free to toss those in and we will do our best. And then if we are unable to get to your question and you still have questions, please feel free to respond to the email once we send those slides out, which I will send right after this. I'm sure folks are typing, but I will read them out as soon as we start receiving.
Gina, I can see a bunch of questions in the meeting chat, but I don't know if you can see them.
I did see one come in.
I can see a whole list of them. So
if we're going to have you do it then.
I'm just going to manage this. The only problem being I can't scroll up and down. Looks like they're coming through as direct messages. So there were a couple questions about some of the politics of this and then some on the program side of these pieces. So on the operational side, there was a question about how does federal funding flow? Does the federal funds go to the parents? Does any money go to the provider? Priya can give a little bit more detail on this, but in general, Wisconsin Shares is a subsidy program that is paid to the parents on an EBT card that they use to then pay their provider for their service. And that is the lion's share of the child care federal funding that we run on a regular basis. There are some programs on the quality side that we set aside some of the funding to pay for the pre-licensing services in some other areas. Priya, maybe you want to speak a little bit to that, but the lion's share of the money goes in the direct services side to parents on an EBT card.
That's correct. At least 70% of the funding, at least 70% of the funding must go to the subsidy program. And so the vast majority of CCDF funding goes to Wisconsin Shares subsidy on EBT cards, and then parents pay providers directly. There is some funding that goes towards workforce supports to enhance the quality of programs and to support them with training and technical assistance.
So I got a couple questions. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I have some questions as well.
Give me a second. Let me finish up a couple here real quick. Okay. So one of the questions was about how many of the kids are in Wisconsin Shares. And I just want to be clear about this. There's about 4,800 providers in the state. There's roughly a little less than 180,000 kids in childcare in the state. And so those are a little different. At any given point in time, 20 to 22% of the kids are on Wisconsin Shares in the state. So about a fifth of the kids are on subsidy. Everybody else is private pay. There are more people eligible for subsidy than use it. That is common across the country. That is sort of a national phenomenon that folks see. And I think we continue to try and get more people to utilize the program. And also a question about whether we're confident about Wisconsin not being at risk of losing federal funding. And, you know, let me say two things about that. One, very clearly, we've already made the January childcare payments. Cards are loaded and people are using them. Folks should have confidence in the system. I don't think we have any concerns about being able to make the February payments and other payments moving forward. There are, you know, some additional guidance, I think, that we're likely to see and maybe reporting requirements, but our system is well positioned to be able to meet those and continue to move forward. It may be administratively burdensome, it may be more paperwork and things we got to collect, but we're confident that our system, I think particularly because of its unique history, is probably one of the best positioned in the country for being able to navigate some of the questions that are coming in. Gina, if you're getting some questions, why don't we take yours? Otherwise, I've got a few more here.
Yeah, so, and Priya, this one may be a little bit more geared towards you. So providers charge for days that the child does not attend. How does that factor into charging for no services? Oh, you're on mute, Priya.
Can you read the question one more time?
Yeah, so providers charge for days that that the child does not attend. How does that factor into charging for no services?
So it is true that providers often do charge for days that a child does not attend. For example, children often get sick and miss a day of childcare. And so that is permissible. Parent receives a subsidy based on the need that they have for childcare and pays the childcare provider according to the contract that the parent and the provider have. So the parent and provider are required to have a contract that outline the terms of payment agreements, absences, and so parents are paying the provider according to those agreements. And so it is permissible for Wisconsin Shares to be used according to those set procedures that providers have. Jeff, is there anything you want to add there?
My recollection, is there actually either a state law or rule about not being able to penalize providers for when kids are sick or missing days? And I think that's pretty common and pretty standard. I think the question is driving is, how do you know when it's fraud? How do you know when a kid just stopped showing up? And I think when we did the licensing visit, or get a tip, or we're checking the enrollment and attendance records, if there's discrepancies between the, we've talked about those policies, Paige just talked about that. How many approved days can you be absent? And there's a limit on that. And if the kid's absent more than that and we're paying for it, that's going to trigger a review. It might trigger a clawback and recovery of money, and it's going to go into that program integrity investigation. And if it's 2 days, you know, it might just be a small recovery. And if it's all of a sudden the kid's been gone for a month, then you're probably clawing back all of the share's authorization in that space. And that's what the system's designed to do.
And if the child has not attended for a month, both the parent and provider are required to notify their county child care worker that issued the subsidy so that appropriate action can be taken.
You know, one of the questions that folks have, I think, Scott, you asked, you know, does this matter if the president decides to target Wisconsin for political reasons? Let me say this. I think what you see in Wisconsin in the wake of the 2009, you know, fraud scandal was a bipartisan response to program integrity, to making sure that the subsidies for childcare were going to be paid and used responsibly. You have Republicans and Democrats working together, passing laws and bills across administrations. It was the end of the Doyle administration put in a lot of these reforms. It was Governor Walker's administration that moved us to the EBT cards. You know, we've continued that. And I think as we've seen these conversations around what's been happening on the federal funding side, not just recently out of Minnesota, but in the whole last year, what we've seen is a politicization of these issues. There are certainly some very significant issues going on in Minnesota, and there is no question that the president politicizes this for an agenda and targets folks for it. I think what you've seen the governor say and what you see Wisconsin leaders doing is showing that we have a strong system that has navigated these issues, that has high integrity, that addresses these things when they come. And so we're confident about our ability to continue to run a robust and great childcare system. I think the speaker referred to having been here through this experience and helped pass some of these laws. And you see the governor committed to doing that. We're committed to doing that. But nothing can stop the president from politicizing an issue. And I think we all see that playing out in a variety of ways all across the country right now. And I think that concerns everyone, frankly.
Jeff, I see a couple of questions around improper payments when they're discovered and kind of the system to recoup those.
So Priya, you might need to talk a little bit about this, but when we discover an improper payment, it's going to trigger that, and we'll send these out to you, but that process that we showed you, that process graph for a review, they're going to go through the documentation, and improper payments happen. There is a difference between improper payments and fraud. And I guess I want to draw a distinction there. This is a transactional business system. So we're sometimes checking and auditing the records. Did you get paid the right amount? Was everything billed correctly? And there are going to be transactional things that happen in that get squared up throughout the course of the year. I just got a letter from my health insurance provider that my dental provider owes money back to them for my kid's dental work, right? Like those things get squared. That's not necessarily fraud. And if we think that there's intentional and fraudulent activity, there's also going to be penalties and recruitments. We're going to recoup the money that is an improper payment, a transactional error. And if we think those improper payments are fraudulent, there could be legal and prosecutorial actions as well. So Priya, you want to talk a little bit about kind of anything more you want to add to those distinctions and kind of how that works?
Yeah, I think it depends on the severity of the improper payment, any patterns that we are seeing in that particular parent or provider. And so it can really, our responses can really range from technical assistance all the way to overpayments, retrieving those funds to termination of a program from Wisconsin Shares. And so there is a range of enforcement that does happen depending on the severity of the improper payments that happened.
And again, generally we can put people on a payment plan to recoup those funds. That is common. If we need to, we can take it out of other payments depending on what kind of program that they're in sometimes. And then if necessary, if we have a provider that we've had to close or terminate from the share system and they owe money, we can refer them to the Department of Revenue for tax intercept to recoup and recover the money on an ongoing basis. And we do that. Gina, you got other questions popping through?
I do. I think we probably have time for maybe two more. We do have one related to a separate program, which I'll do next. But one is, can you briefly walk through the page on the website that lists the suspended childcare providers and the data that is put on that site? So this is related to the Wisconsin Shares suspended terminated providers.
I need to look at that page. Hold on one second. Is there a specific question about the page, or folks just want to understand what they're reading?
Just understand what they're reading.
So the first number, so there's a list of suspended child care providers. This is required that we post suspended programs. We do that for programs. We share information about programs that are revoked for health and safety reasons, as well as programs that are suspended from Wisconsin Shares. If you're just trying to understand the headers here of the providers, each provider is given a provider number, a license number. That is the first number. The 001 is the location number. If you see a 002, that means it's a provider that may have had more than one location. Then it has the name of the provider, the licensee, so the name of the individual that holds the license for the provider, and then the county where the provider resides. And what I'm seeing underneath that is the date that the provider was suspended, and a list of the reasons for suspension, the different violations.
And I know access visit, just so everyone's clear on what that means, that is when you do an unannounced visit and we are unable to gain egress to the provider location. Again, it is possible, particularly for in-home providers, that they're, if somebody's on a field trip or whatever, that there's a reason that, you know, on the unannounced visit, why people might not be available. So that in and of itself, the first time is not always going to be conclusive of a problem. But if there is a no access visit, then we're going to do a repeat visit to gain entry. And that is usually, if we have more than one no access visit, that is going to be a pretty keen indicator that there's a problem. They're going to get referred into the system. If you're looking at the page that Prairie was just walking through, you can see the kinds of things we just suspended this provider for the very kinds of things we were talking about, duplication of records, outside employment. These are all things that we were able to investigate, verify, and result in a suspension. I don't know any of the details on this particular one. I didn't review it in advance, but I think it illustrates actually how the system works. When it identifies that there's a problem, we document that, it's transparent, it's public, and action gets taken.
And then the last question that we have time for is, has there been any review of child care accounts dollars?
Yes, so there are, child care accounts actually operates on a, I would say, somewhat higher bar than Shares does, because it has proactive auditing requirements that we put in place for it. So there were sampling audit requirements put in, there were reviews of all of our federally funded programs during the ARPA era. We had some clawbacks of different pieces that we used. Priya, you want to speak to that?
For child care counts, we have consistently done a sample of a certain percentage of all providers that received funding. We randomly select them and the auditors review to make sure that they were eligible for the funds and that the information they entered into their application was correct and that they used the funds according to the allowable uses. And so again, if we found any irregularities, we can do, can take similar action as we take in shares where we issue an overpayment and the provider can pay us back with a lump sum or be put on a payment plan. And if we do not receive payment, again, they can be referred over to Department of Revenue for tax intercept. So some of the actions we take are quite similar, but we actually did a proactive random sampling throughout the life of the program.
Okay. Well, we appreciate folks joining us. We're going to do this again with the legislature tomorrow. If you have additional questions, feel free to reach out to Gina. We're happy to walk people through some of the pieces here. And again, as the national story continues to unfold, if you have questions or want to talk to folks, let us know. We're here to be a resource in how Wisconsin system works. Really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for joining us. Bye, everybody.